Hi there, can I help you? You're looking for something for the garden?
Well, I want to plant
what
for my...
What she wants is a nice lay landy hedge, am I right?
No, well...
And a lovely big hot tub.
Your vote is your voice, so don't let someone else decide for you.
Oh, and a pair of those crouching stone lions, they'd look great either side of your front door.
Do I know you?
That's our new trainee. He's very keen.
Make sure you're registered to vote. Go to checktheregister.ie and be a voter so that it's your voice that's heard. From Am Comisiún Toghcháin, Ireland's Independent Electoral Commission.
And would you like that for delivery?
Yeah. Apartment 3, 6th floor.
Oh, you're going to need a crane for those lions then.
Seachtain, an Indo Askeilige.
Time in mon iroctí a yen of chacht ar a chur. Agus suiligam a machan seo, gur féidir é a chur in uig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltí, fís, turmi.
Tá sé dochreitse nach bhéadach ara i gúrna meán an cheistin a eicol.
Bhí an tálam a gináam go raibh orchár na reachtam. Iadach sé tárin go raibh an orchár stán i lis dúhal agus gimine fnacht gór a clig sár ducha sin eachar. Ná ní bhin áon dár dárach sin. Vin Marav.
Seachtain. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Mateo O'Driscoll, Horgan, extra man is Fitzgerald. Oh, Fitzgerald is cutting back inside! Leinster have another! Darcy O'Driscoll.
Hello and welcome to the Left Wing Independent.ie's rugby podcast. I'm Will Slattery and I'm delighted to be joined for our Champions Cup review by Luke Fitzgerald and Cian Tracy. And Luke, I'll give you a nice easy one to start off with. Why do you think Leinster didn't beat La Rochelle on Saturday?
Well, I didn't think they played well. First of all, they looked a bit nervy. You know, that doesn't help. It's a good question. I think, like, I do think La Rochelle were excellent. Like, I think the physical side of things really told. I thought, you know, I did think Wayne Barnes allowed them not to have sour grapes, but I thought he was really poor. Like, to have 14 penalties without a yellow card, you know, just because all the offenses were different doesn't mean that you should let them away with that many. I thought that was a bit crazy, but they were still the better team. Like, La Rochelle played better rugby, I thought. I thought they spread Leinster a couple of times, you know, and they got to places that stressed Leinster. Like, even the first try, you know, however good Ty Furlong is, and it was a mistake by Jimmy O'Brien to not trust him to with that tackle and bite in. That was Leinster's tight head there against, you know, a La Rochelle winger. So they did find those areas quite a lot. And I actually thought Gary Ringrose and Robbie Henshaw defended unbelievably well in the first half to contain them. So it was a combination of both factors, really. And I do think that, yes, Wayne Barnes was really, like, I mean, I couldn't believe some of the times they were grabbing Jameson Gibson-Park at the elbow. I was just like, that's just always a penalty. There was just a few mad bits at the breakdown, I thought. So I think Leinster probably have, there was a bit of justification maybe in their anger with Barnes on that, although they rode their luck at the end as well themselves. But I think it was a combination of La Rochelle playing really well, you know, and I think Leinster playing poorly and probably being forced to play poorly in a lot of circumstances. The line speed, how they got up outside Leinster's forward pod. So that has been working really well for Leinster. The forward pod has been pulling that ball back really far, and it's been a really crisp pass to whoever it is, usually Johnny Sexton behind that. They really closed that down very, very well. Now, I do think, and there's probably a bigger conversation to have around the nerves on it, because I think this was really evident with Leinster. I didn't think that passing was as good to Johnny Sexton, but I also thought that the backs looked like they crept up. Do you remember last week, Will, I was talking about that position that Leinster backs had found themselves in against that kind of press defence, that high press defence, where they had tucked themselves in and they were making it harder to get to them. Everyone's almost running on an arc, whereas traditionally speaking, you always wanted to be wider and squarer from the ball carrier. Leinster have kind of been following each other on a curve, really, and it makes it hard for people to get in at that, but they didn't do that well. And La Rochelle defended it well. And the combination, and sorry, the result of that was that Leinster were not able to get any momentum consistently throughout their attack, and they looked stagnant. The passing was poor. I think that was there were a couple of reasons why they didn't come out on top in the game. And I think one thing I would say is that some of the rhetoric has been pretty, I did think La Rochelle were better on the day, but like it still took them to the very bitter death of the game to go and get that win. So I think Brian is a little bit harsh enough on Leinster. Like, that's a really good La Rochelle team, obviously a brilliantly coached one too. And Leinster fall just short at the very end. So still a valiant effort, even though they didn't play well.
Yeah, there's a couple of things there that I definitely want to touch on. The kind of question about maybe the nervousness of the team in particular. But Keane, just first, from your own perspective, I know you were there, one of the lucky people to be in Marseille. The atmosphere looked absolutely electric on TV for sure. Like, anything else jumping out to you, you know, your initial thoughts, or even having seen it back subsequently, about why you think the result went the way it did?
Yeah, first of all, Will, it was one of those kind of one of those days where you were just like privileged to kind of be there. It was just an unbelievable occasion. I was there a couple of days before, and just you could just sense the atmosphere building. And fair play to all the Leinster fans who managed to make it over, because it was bloody expensive to get there. And yeah, like the La Rochelle fans, to be honest, just made it the occasion that it was. Like the colour, the noise they brought. It ended up being like, it felt like a home game for them. And there's no doubt that had a huge advantage as well to them. But yeah, like I think I would be more critical, I have to say, of Luke's overall general tone. I thought this was a poor, poor defeat for Leinster. For lots of different reasons. I think a lot of the same issues that we've been talking about over the last year came to fruition again. I think they have spent the last 13 months coming up with a game plan to beat basically La Rochelle, because they fell short last year. Everything was in their favor in terms of, you look at their injury profile, the amount of minutes they'd played, and you compare that to La Rochelle, who are missing arguably two of their best players, certainly in Carbarlo and Victor Vito. And yeah, I just thought it was poor. I accept that they lost it in the last minute, but I thought La Rochelle were considerably better, I think, in most aspects of the game, probably except discipline, really. And even at that, they gave away one of the stupidest yellow cards you'll ever see. And I actually thought that La Rochelle stepped it up in that 10-minute period rather than Leinster kind of shutting them down. And that's just not good. I think the scrum struggled again. Their lineup more was actually good going forward, but the second try that La Rochelle scored, they got absolutely minced. And like, that's not a good sign either. I thought a lot of their big players drifted in and out of the game. I totally agree with Luke on the two centres. I thought them and Josh van der Fleer were probably the three best Leinster players. But I just thought too many guys drifted in and out of the game. And you can't afford to do that in a Champions Cup final. And maybe we'll get on to talk about why that was. And maybe it was an element of, you know, nerves or whatever. But I think a lot of credit has to go to La Rochelle. Like Luke said, they're an awesome team. They brought the brutal physicality, which we knew they'd do. But they played some brilliant rugby as well. Like that opening try was class. Like it's the kind of try that you've kind of come to expect Leinster to score, really. And I think, you know, there was definitely a couple of decisions that they can feel hard done by. I think the Michael Alatoa turnover at the end game, that was particularly harsh when he gave a penalty against that. But I don't know. I just don't know if I'd be going down the Wayne Barnes referee route. And I've seen a couple of people kind of suggest that. I think Leinster rode their luck. To be fair, Luke, you did say that in the end game. I think they were very lucky that they didn't get a yellow card with the amount of penalties they were coughing up as well. But like I said, I just think Leinster have had so long to prepare like this new game plan. And like La Rochelle, let's be fair, they didn't really do anything that Leinster wouldn't have been expecting. We knew they were going to come after them at the set piece. We knew the breakdown, they were going to slow it down and make it as messy as possible. And Leinster still couldn't find a way. And again, I accept that it took them till the end of the game. But I think this is a poor, poor, poor defeat. And I think it's potentially very damaging. I think it's more damaging than the semi-final loss last year. And I suppose the broader point is, I think all of the issues that we're talking about are Ireland's issues going to New Zealand this summer and beyond into next year, which is obviously a massive year. So, yeah, I would be more, I think, critical of the defeat, to be honest.
One moment that really summed up the difficulties Leinster were having for me was just before halftime, when they got that scrum against the head and they were able to work their way all the way down to the other end of the pitch, and they got the 5-meter scrum after the Jimmy O'Brien kick, and they got a free kick off that scrum and did a quick, you know, a quick tap and, you know, went up towards the line. And then they went to go out the back, and the passing just wasn't crisp. It was Furlong to Gibson Park to Sexton. And they ended up going from like 5 meters out to about 20 meters back. And it kind of summed up just that lack of crispness, that kind of the execution that was off. And I take points that you're both saying, like there's a lot of things to unpack, but I just thought the execution was just really poor on the day. And even some of the game management elements of it, like that third quarter where they were 18-10 ahead, like that kind of lead in the final with that kind of time on the clock, you're in a really strong position. Like Leinster had the ball in La Rochelle.
The yellow card as well, Will. Like, I mean, look, they'll be absolutely gutted. Like, they'll be that one will really, really hurt. When Keane's talking through it there, like I'm finding it hard to kind of pick things against them. The one thing I would say is I think you're completely wrong on the Wayne Barnes thing. You know, that accumulation of penalties is just wrong. No matter if they're, you know, for lots of different things, you know, it was a crazy amount of penalties, 14 penalties. And like they were in cynical spots too, like a good few of them as well. And I actually thought he let them away with a bit too. So I thought that was one area. Now, as you say, though, and this is the key point in kind of criticizing that. Like La Rochelle were on top anyway, I think. That, and that's the key point. Like, I think if you look at it, they had the better opportunities. They looked more dangerous with ball in hand. They were able to stifle Leinster and make Leinster, who have looked really, really crisp with ball in hand. Like, I've been so impressed with their ball handling ability. They made that, like, they slowed it down, whether it was right or wrong. Like, you still have to ride. There's still an element of rugby where it's so technical and difficult to referee. Like, you can nearly watch every single breakdown and see a penalty. But you still have to play the referee to a certain extent. And I thought they did that well as well. You know what I mean? Like whether I think it's right or wrong, and I think it was definitely wrong in my opinion, that there was that amount of penalties. They did it. They managed it really well. Like, they were like, that's the stuff about Jameson Gibson Park. Look, I thought he had a really, really, really difficult day, and he didn't think he played well anyway. But he had a difficult day. Like, they were scragging him. They were at his back arm when he was passing. You know, the rooks were like half a second slower. So everything looked like, you know, all these times that they've been playing, like Leinster's rook ball has been unbelievably quick and clean. And he's looked brilliant. Like, because the game has been so quick. And Leinster look like they have an extra half a second on the ball, like everyone. And all of a sudden, you know, when you don't have those things, I think that's when you get a back shoulder pass. That's when, you know, when one back shoulder pass happens, then someone who's been expecting everything, like everything for them has been running really cleanly all year. All of a sudden, you got to check your run and you're saying, wow, this is kind of tricky. We've got no momentum going into this contact with a guy who might be 5 or 10 kilos heavier than you. They're all problems. And it means that they couldn't really move that La Rochelle pack around and expose some of those big men for long periods of time, which was always going to be a key factor in this game. I think everyone's view on this was that if Leinster played their game, that they and what, you know, the game they have been playing, that there'd be periods where the ball wasn't played for long periods of time. And that was always going to be, you know, to Leinster's advantage with guys who were just a little bit lighter, probably a little bit fitter. And that's not the way it panned out. It panned out, it was kind of slower. There was lots of penalties. Leinster didn't get to do, like, they didn't kick to the corner and go through 30 phases on their line and eventually break them down with a try. They didn't do any of those things. And I think that's broken other teams. That didn't break La Rochelle. And I think there was two sides to that. I thought La Rochelle were brilliant, but I thought Leinster looked nervy. And I think it was, you know, probably, you know, as a result of some really good La Rochelle and some very cute La Rochelle play. So, that's probably one thing I would say. And I actually agreed with lots of what Keane said, as I said. But I just think the Barnes thing, are you counting up these penalties? Like, you've given like 3 or 4 warnings here. Yes, they're for different penalties, but shouldn't matter at this point. A penalty is a penalty at this point. And that was very frustrating to watch.
The only thing I'd say against that is, and this is to play totally dead advocate, by the way, like, the French fans were incensed with Barnes, even when they won at full time. You know, the refs go up and they get their medal. I don't know, was this shown on TV? The ref and the assistants go up and get their medals. Like, he got booed out of town. So I think the French fans would, like, even though they won, would say that he, you know, he didn't do them any favors really either. And I do know what you're saying, the cumulative penalties, perhaps he should have given a yellow card and it would have stopped him doing it. But
do you think the complexion of the game changes though, Keane, if La Rochelle get, like, say, a yellow card earlier, if Leinster go for a try and get one? Like, these are all ifs and buts. But I would imagine that there was periods where Leinster were actually making some progress and it was stopped, killed pretty early by a La Rochelle penalty. And that happened quite a lot. Now, Leinster pinged them over. They got the threes, you know, but if there was a yellow card, they might have gone to the corner. And I just...
Luke, just to come in on that one, to ask you, because, like, you know, one thing that people have obviously pointed to, like, Leinster kicked seven penalties. Very unusual for them to not go to the corner more. They went early on and didn't get over the try line. I'm not sure if that played any bearing. I know, some of them were, like, straight dead in front in that kind of grey area where you're not, like, really near to maybe take a scrum. But, like, were you looking in real time thinking, oh, maybe go to the corner here, take a scrum there? Or did you back those calls when they were being made?
At the time, I felt there was a few where I was saying, like, Leinster normally go for these ones. But I didn't feel like they were on top, and clearly they didn't either. And I felt like they thought that it would happen, but that while they were there, they weren't feeling it. And they said, you know what, let's build a score in a final. I thought maybe it might be worth going to the corner here. They might have them on. They looked like they were making good progress, and another penalty actually might have got them that yellow card. You know, when you back up, and because it wasn't one after another. Do you know when you get those ones where it's like two, like Leinster at the end of the game, for example, there was like a penalty after a penalty after a penalty in a row for the same kind of stuff, which I thought they absolutely should have got a yellow card for. That never really happened with La Rochelle. Now, my argument was that there was loads of them, and just because it didn't happen consecutively, like straight after each other, it doesn't mean that it shouldn't be a yellow card. But that's more often how they happen, because the referees don't want to give a yellow card in a final. It took a really silly play for Wayne Barnes to give one in a match that was kind of stop-starty for a lot of it, with lots of penalties. So that was my thinking on it. I was thinking, normally they would, even if they don't get some, they might just, you know, in their own mind, it's a momentum thing too. You know, when the referee sees you going to the corner, they're kind of going, this team, they think they're on top here. Do you know that kind of way? Everyone watches it thinking, going, well, Leinster obviously think they're going to get a try here because they think they're better. They never really thought that. They obviously thought it was closer match than and they weren't as confident as they usually are. And I felt like that was one of the reasons why they maybe didn't get a yellow card, even if I thought that was wrong that they didn't.
I think that's the really important point. And like one thing I would say about this, Will and Luke, is that I think that like one of the reasons it's become, because I was certainly writing about it in Monday's newspaper. It's become such a topic, obviously, that they lost. Of course, you're going to scrutinize every decision. But in the press conference afterwards, Johnny Sexton brought this up on his own. No one asked him directly about, you know, kicking the points, not going for the corner. He brought it up in the immediate aftermath of the game. So to me, that screamed that those thoughts were in his head. Oh, God, could we have been a bit braver? And I think Luke has hit the nail on the head there. They like, and you mentioned it too, Will, like Leinster in Ireland over the last couple of years, we've actually had chats about this a lot, because Luke, you, I know you're one for kind of, you're kind of like, oh, you know, maybe take the points, aren't you, generally? Like,
well, international rugby, yeah. I always think take the points. So,
yeah, I was kind of thinking you might have fallen on that side, but it was very interesting that the first penalty Leinster got, it was kickable, but it was from the left. Okay, it wasn't straight in front of the post, but they went to the corner. So they were clearly going, okay, you know, let's go at them. And I thought, I was going, okay, they're setting out their stall here. And they actually ran a really slick line-out move, one of the few moves that they actually got to pull off properly. But La Rochelle ended up turning it over and they don't get a try. And from there on in, they took their points every time. Now, there's something changed within that. And I feel like La Rochelle were happy to concede the points in front of the post because they knew Leinster, like you said, Luke, they weren't feeling it. And I think the psychological advantage that La Rochelle got from that was enormous, because their pack was going, I could imagine after every break of play when they're under the post lining up for a penalty, they were going, lads, they don't want to take us on here. They're happy to take the points. They don't want to take us on. And to me, that was a big, big error by Leinster. I'm not for a second saying every penalty you get kicking into the corner, but I think the ones before and after halftime, the one after halftime was particularly...
The one after halftime, I think that was the one that I thought 100%.
Yeah. I think everyone was thinking that. That's, did you guys... I think everyone thought that's out of character.
Did you lads notice, first, though...
Some of the penalties were, like, extremely straightforward on the 22. Like, so you can almost...
It's almost like, are you going to be getting a 5 meter line out here? You probably don't want to. You're probably getting a 10 meter line out for nearly a 99%, you know, kick for your goal kicker. If not close to 100, no, as close to 100 as possible. They were gimmies, you know. So you're kind of saying, and like you can't go to a scrum. That's one thing we can't forget that would make you nervous. Like any mistake you make, you're going to a scrum, like, and you're kind of thinking, oh, Jesus, like, this is not. And in fairness, I will say one thing. That pack is gigantic. Like, I actually don't think there's a pack as big. Maybe the South African pack when they're all piled in there together, but there isn't the French pack. Sorry, the French pack is very similar. But I don't see, like, New Zealand won't cause, they won't have the same kind of size that France have or South Africa have. And I even think France might even be bigger than South Africa. Like, it's ridiculous. And that La Rochelle pack is very similar, you know.
We were at the captain's run, just a quick point on that, on Fridays, and we were actually pitch side, and the French teams are just so laid back. It's very different to, like, you know, what we're used to over here. Everything is like, oh yeah, come on in, you can watch what you like, you know, blah, blah, blah. And Skelton and Rooney Antonio walked out onto the pitch and we were like really close. And like, honestly, it's only when you see them, because you don't get to see that if you're at a match up in the stand, but see them on pitch level, they are enormous. Jonathan Daunty, the same. But I think we should talk about that penalty after halftime a little bit more, because I thought it was really interesting watching it back. We didn't have ref mics at the game, so I missed it at the time. So to me, it looked like the pack were kind of huddled together, ready themselves to, okay, let's go. You know, now is the time to, you know, put the foot in the throat. But James Ryan was the one who went up to Wayne Barnes and said, post. And Wayne Barnes, because you can hear it on TV watching,
goes,
back,
Johnny says,
goes, yeah, he goes, you're not the captain, it's Johnny. And Johnny then came along and said, post as well. So I thought it was fascinating that James Ryan was the one kind of stepping up there and making a decision. And we all know what happened in the Six Nations. Yeah, when James Ryan, you know, didn't quite go for the corner during the Six Nations. So, yeah, like I thought that was a big error. And I don't think it's a hindsight thing either. At the time, I was kind of thinking, you know, you have the momentum. And like I said, the psychological advantages that La Rochelle were getting out of Leinster, taking the 3 points, because, you know, we're talking about the scrum. Like, you think back to La Rochelle went for a scrum, like, on the 22, down to 14 players now, albeit they had brought on Bhatia, who basically played in the back row, not just on the scrum, but he was pretty much playing as another back row. But they had full belief in their ability to score tries. They scored 3-0. And my sort of overall take is, any team who keeps this Leinster team tryless are worthy champions. They'd scored 47 tries in their 7 games en route to the final and then didn't score any when it mattered most. And I think that will sting for a long time.
Do you know as well what I thought? I thought the centre partnership was really good. Daunte was unbelievable.
Yeah, he's class.
And you know, Leinster, I feel like when I look at Leinster, I think those two guys in the centre are so good. And they play together so much often. Like, for Ireland, they play against brilliant opposition all the time. And I always think that's a real point of difference for Leinster. I actually thought that was an area where, like, it was kind of, there was kind of parity there. If not, the others were on top. The La Rochelle guys were on top. So that was an interesting one as well, because I think, like, Leinster have always, they just seem to be able to get momentum through those guys, like, nonstop. And they're usually like a closed book in terms of their own defense. Like, they're just locked down, really difficult to break down. You know, and look, I thought the guys, to, like, 3 tries. And it feels weird to say it, because usually your centers are kind of the key guys. But I thought they defended unbelievably well at times. Like, they were the last ditch tackle, I don't know how many times, Robbie Henshaw and Gary Ringrose. I thought they defended out of their skins, which tells you how well, you know, how exposed that the Leinster team were at times. I thought that was my impression watching it. I was going, Jesus, that was a brilliant, like, that was a one-on-one in a lot of space. Gary Ringrose absolutely nailed that, or Robbie Henshaw nailed that. I felt that in so many occasions. So I did feel like they were under stress a lot. So it was brilliant La Rochelle attack. And one thing I would say as well, another thing I'd say about finals is you have to defend brilliantly to win. I just feel like that's a baseline. And I said that about Leinster last week, Will. Remember I was talking about them having to defend and stop the momentum of the big La Rochelle carriers. I actually thought they did that okay. What actually really let them down was out wide. I thought they defended really bad out wide. I thought loads of time, like even the first try, like, oh, I still think you have to get him there. Like, that was a poor, like, to let him come inside you, not use the touchline as your defense. And look, you can see why, I could see why Jimmy O'Brien did bite in and help out Tadhg Furlong. It's a mistake, because Tadhg Furlong actually had him easily covered. And he's just a bit of a freak athlete. But I could see why you do that with your tight head prop against a winger. You'd be inclined to help him out. But Hugo Keenan has to use the touchline as his extra defender there. That's a really basic concept, to let him just run inside. It was a good step, but that was a bad try to concede, you know, and those kind of things take the wind out of your sails in the final. So you do have to defend brilliantly no matter who you're playing against. Like, you're going to be playing against a good team in the final. And I always feel like that's a baseline. And sets the tone for the rest of your game. And Leinster didn't defend well out wide. So that was, you know, you do need to do that well against every team in a final.
Keen, another significant part of the game for me anyway was the bench and how Leinster used it and the impact they did or did not get off it. Like, you know, Luke mentioned earlier, a difficult day for Jameson Gibson Park. Like, you have Luke McGrath on the bench, very experienced scrum half who's played in a lot of big games himself. I think he only came on with 5 or 6 minutes to go. I'm not sure if he even got to throw a pass. Even someone like Joe McCarthy, who I know is really young, but has been playing really well the last couple of weeks, had a huge game against Munster the weekend before. He only got 5 minutes in a game where you thought he might be able to give a bit of impact. Kieran Frawley didn't even get off the bench. And then you're kind of wondering, what was the point in having him there if you weren't even going to use him? You had someone like maybe Jordan Larmour, who came into a great bit of form last week again too. Yeah. What did you make of how it was used and that, kind of some of the points there?
I couldn't agree with you more, Will. I was writing about this pretty much almost word for word in terms of what you're saying. Kieran Frawley wasn't used for the second year in a row against La Rochelle in two defeats. Like, it's become a bit of a cliche, but like, your bench is so important now more than ever in rugby. And I just think like the bench, the use of the bench was really, really poor. And, you know, we spend a lot of time lauding Leinster's strength and depth, rightfully so. They've used 60 players this season, but when they needed their strength and depth, and let's remember that they don't have too many injuries or not too many guys missing who would have been there, it let them down. I thought badly. I thought, you know, you can sense that when the replacement props are coming off the bench, like, teams are targeting the Ireland and Leinster scrum. It's so obvious now, but even when the two replacement props came off the bench, they just really went after them. I couldn't agree with you more. To me, they picked the bench. Like, Reece Ruddock made 15 tackles in the 13 minutes that he was on the pitch, like, just ridiculous numbers. But to me, they had picked a bench to see out the game, because I think if they were picking a bench to chase the game, you probably would have had Ryan Baird and Jordan Larmour, like you said, on it. So you'd probably say they picked the right bench because they needed guys to see out the game, but they just couldn't do it. And granted, like, a lot of the 60 are really young guys, but look at the impact that the La Rochelle bench made. I mentioned Bottia already. I thought he was unbelievable in those closing stages. And obviously, Retier came off the bench and scored the try. So I thought it was a big, big, big issue. I didn't think they got any impact really at all from their bench. Obviously, Dan Sheehan came on much earlier than would expect it. And that was costly as well. You know, like, the same thing happened in Paris for Ireland during the Six Nations with Ronan Keller getting injured. But I think it's an issue. And even like, if we're looking kind of further ahead, so like, you know, they're going to bring in Jason Jenkins next season and Charlie Nattoy. He's not going to start ahead of Robbie Henshaw or Gary Ringrose. Now, he could come off the bench and, you know, Jason Jenkins, you know, could play with James Ryan. But like you said, Will, Joe McCarthy is having a great season and looks like a serious, serious athlete. So,
but so is Ryan Baird. Like, to me, like, not having him on the bench against that pack seemed like a... Did you think that was a mistake? Like, is that if you look at the Leinster, if you look at Leinster and you're kind of looking at, and you're kind of thinking to yourself, well, like, what's the big danger here? When you look at the bench, when you're playing La Rochelle, the danger was always going to be that you got overwhelmed in the pack, that they bullied you around in the tight exchanges and you didn't, you know, you ran out of juice with kind of 50 or 60 minutes to go because the weight of just that, like, trying to deal with them in the scrum and the maul, etc. So I need to have a Baird, you know, and a Ruddock there as well. Like, have some serious juice coming onto the pitch at the end. Like, maybe it wouldn't have made a difference, but do you look back and go, see the way Toulouse against Munster had a six forwards on the bench, 6-2 split. To my mind, that was one of the only occasions where you're kind of saying to yourself, do you know what? We actually have, like Jordan Larmour could pretty much play across the back line. You know, is there anything, like, is there a way you could, like, should they be having a 6-2 split? Is that a way to say to yourself, right, no matter what happens at 60, 65 minutes, we're going to unload these guys onto the pitch? They're all brilliant athletes. Is that something that they should be thinking of? Would that help? Or
I asked Leo Cullen that exact question in the build-up to the semi-final against Toulouse. You know, Toulouse were always going to go with the 6-2 split. They did it against Munster. And I asked him, you know, now obviously he made the right decision because they blew them out the gate. But I asked him, you know, is there ever a temptation to kind of just go like for like against these big teams when you know what's coming off the bench? And I'm paraphrasing here, but I think Leinster saw it as their point of difference that they had the extra back and it played into how they wanted to play the high tempo and stuff. But it didn't work out this time. And, you know, you're mentioning Ryan Baird and stuff. Yeah, but Will is right in what he's saying. Like, Joe McCarthy has been really, really good this season. And granted, he's young and he's inexperienced, but he's a big, big lad and he's physical. He's aggressive. But they clearly didn't trust him because they had him on the bench. But to bring him on for a couple of minutes at the end of a game where like the amount of work that Ross Maloney and James Ryan got through, like against up against Skelton, who was awesome, by the way, like to put in that kind of shift after having a calf injury and not really playing. So
sorry, Keane, I would have been thinking about having Joe McCarthy and Baird on the bench together. So that was
with Ruddock and not having Ruddock, is it?
No, have Ruddock too. That's what I'm saying. You're saying go to six juice. Coming on. That's kind of what I'm getting at. Is that you like they're all. If you look at those three guys, they're not unbelievably like Ruddock's a heavy guy. Like he's, you know, in the 115s kilo. He's a serious athlete now. But the others are kind of, they're probably a little bit light still, maybe, but serious athletes, like really kind of strong and powerful and quick. Like they don't take anything away from you as well. And like if you're playing a fast game, like you're probably like the key difference for Leinster is actually that their pack are very quick and have great ball handling. Not necessarily that they have more backs on the pitch. It's just an interesting one, isn't it? Like would that be something that might be a solution or?
It could be, but because like it was, we can say with like full confidence now, it was a total waste having Kieran Frawley on the bench because they didn't even look to use him. So like, I find it baffling in this day and age that the way professional modern rugby is that you would waste a sub, because that's what it was. It was like having a guy ready to go on the bench and not using him, to me, is just, it doesn't really make sense. So, and they did the same thing last year when they played La Rochelle. Kieran Frawley didn't get off the bench either. So, like, I think it's a big issue. And, you know, when Johnny Sexton went off and Ross Byrne came on, he made a lot of errors. And unfortunately, I think we saw why he's not in the sort of the Ireland conversation. He seemed to really freeze. Obviously, he kicked a good goal, but had a couple of really sloppy knock-on. They just didn't get going. So I agree with you, Will, about your original point. I thought the use, but also the impact of the bench, what little time they got, I think was really poor and costly.
Yeah, because if you even look at how the game unfolded, it was 18-10 after about 56, 57 minutes. That's when you'd be hoping a bench could come on and, you know, as you say, see it through or give that little bit of impact that could get them to the end. Because as you mentioned there, you know, Ross Byrne came on, made a couple of errors. Even like that moment when Brees Doolan had that drop goal and Johnny Sexton fielded the ball in his own line, to go for a dummy kick on your own line with an 8-point lead, and then they kind of get out of jail. He gets the ball to Hugo Keenan, and instead of kicking it away himself, he takes it into contact. And I just felt maybe to the nervousness that Luke, you referred to at the start, maybe like I thought there was a couple of moments like that in the last 15, 20, like Gibson Park had a very sloppy high tackle as well. The little knock-ons from Ross Byrne.
But even that Jimmy O'Brien the Jimmy O'Brien touch into, like that was a moment, that was a huge moment. Like that was really, now it was kind of unlucky and I can see why you'd be like, oh, just get the fecking thing out. Like you don't want a Rob Howley kind of moment in the final. But I don't know, it just feels like,
they're also on Leinster, like, aren't they? Every single thing that Will has listed out and you mentioned in Jimmy O'Brien, like, these are not mistakes you associate with a Leinster team.
I think so. Like, and you have to give credit to La Rochelle as well. Like, I look, at the same time, we do want, of course, we're looking internally, we're kind of saying, like, this is the bulk of the Irish team as well. You know, and this seems to be kind of a recurring problem, is that, you know, don't seem to be able to deal, or at least, like, deal is probably the wrong word. We don't seem to be able to impose against these teams our game plan on them. Now, I think that the Toulouse one, look, I don't think they're the team that they were, but also they would have been knackered from the week before. So I'm not even sure we got to see them at their best and really see if we can impose our game plan against them in top form. But like, that's what you're always hoping. You're hoping that they say, right, well, look, we're not going to be able to do those things against them. We're going to survive or try to survive in the scrum and the maul. But for the rest of the game, and this is what we talked about last week, Will, the rest of the game, there's a lot of that. There is a lot of that. We're going to hold on to the ball for long periods. We're going to run you around really quickly. We're going to test those big 140, 150 kilo guys and see if they can last the pace with us for, you know, 35, 45 minutes, you know, that kind of range of time. See if they can live with us. No one else has been able to do it so far. But we haven't been able to impose that game plan in the big matches so far. And it's that's the next hurdle for Leinster and for the Irish team. And I think you're completely right to mention the point about the bench. And that's something that the coaches will have a look and say, do you know what? Do we need to have a rethink of that? Because you're right. You need to have, it's 23 guys now. You need to have, and they do have good players. You know, you could leave Frawley. You could have Frawley and Luke McGrath on there as your two specialists and they could cover nearly everything there. And like, look, Frawley, like, if there ever was a time for him to have a think about what's going on, like I'm banging this drum for ages and I feel so tired of saying it, but like, he's a serious, serious rugby player and he's sitting on the bench in all the big games. Like, he's too good to be sitting on the bench for the big games for the whole lot of it. He adds value, but Sorry, I know I'm digressing, but it is funny. It's something the coaches will definitely have to think about in terms of the bench, and because you need to have people adding value there and giving you that extra bit of impetus to close out a game.
Yeah, just to give like La Rochelle some due, obviously, like, we're going to be focusing from an Irish perspective. It's an Irish podcast, but, you know, Will Skelton got it through 80 minutes. You know, he was absolutely unbelievable. And even in the end game, in that long period of possession, it was actually him. It was some of his big kind of pick and goes that were actually driving them towards the line. I think just before Retarié squeezed over, he had a really big carry. I thought he was absolutely unbelievable. Like,
that definition, the definition of a big game player in every sense of the word.
And to give Ihaio West his due,
he got all the kicks.
Only against Leinster is his goal kicking like kind of really honed in on it. Like, every other time I see him play, he probably misses two or three gimmies. But, you know, he really stood up. You know, I can't remember the name of the young scrum half who came in for Kerbarlo, but he had a very accomplished
Thomas Bergeon.
Yeah, Bergeon, considering the pressure he was under to step in for a big All Black, like, he played great too. And then, you know, Ronan O'Gara keen as well. Like, you know, obviously we were joking a few weeks ago that, you know, we were saying it'll be the Rod show now for the next few weeks. But now he's gone on, what an achievement. Like, to not only win the Champions Cup, but to beat Leinster and to beat a Leinster team who were coming in with such high hopes. Like, what does this mean for his career?
Every time you get a chance to, like, listen to Ronan O'Gara, I made this point, I think, when we were having our chat about the final. He's very like Stuart Lancaster. Just like everything he says is interesting. Like, he's so engaging. And yeah, like, it added from an Irish journalist point of view, it added such a brilliant kind of, you know, subplot to the whole thing. Because, like, if Leinster had lost to Toulouse in the final last weekend, it wouldn't have been as much. But the fact you had Ronan O'Gara, Donica Ryan, like, had a really big role to play in that as well. And, I, you know, Sean Dougal, the former Munster back row, is working as an S&C coach as well. So the amount of Irish interest obviously made it more fascinating. But I thought it was just a brilliant coaching display, I have to say, from Ronan O'Gara. And that's the job he's done. I ended up having a chat with the sporting director of La Rochelle after the game. And, you know, he was just telling me about the impact that O'Gara has made since he's come there. They're so, so impressed with him, the players. And even, like, he's speaking from his point of view at board level. Seemingly, like, on the Friday, he gave a team talk that had kind of, like, removed the emotion from the occasion. And he actually just, like, put up a load of stats on a PowerPoint to show, you know, why La Rochelle were a better team than Leinster and why La Rochelle were going to outscore them in the last 20 minutes. And everything he kind of had said came to fruition. Even in the day before the game, he was telling us he truly believed that there was something special happening tomorrow. And, like, you can kind of, like, pass those kind of comments off as, of course, the head coach is going to say it, but he was really confident. He was really confident. Everyone wrote them off, myself included. But the job he's done there is just fantastic. You see the scenes in down at the port in La Rochelle. It reminded me of the days when Munster were winning Heineken Cups and, like, O'Connell Street, Limerick was packed out. And I don't think you can underestimate it's not all down to Ronan O'Gara. I'm not saying that for a second, but it's not easy to go into a French club and change the culture and say, you know, the Champions Cup matters, like, because historically, like, Toulouse are the one club you'd say, you know, because it's ingrained in their culture. But La Rochelle don't have a history in the Champions Cup. So it's not easy to go into, you know, a board and go, we need to treat the top 14 and the Heineken Cup with as much respect as each other. So he's managed to do that in his first season as head coach. He's managed to win a Champions Cup. So, I just thought it was brilliant, to be honest with you. Like, he was just so engaging across the few days we got to speak to him. Really, really gracious, you'd have to say, in defeat as well. There was no kind of, like, rubbing it in faces or anything. And yeah, his stock is just rising and rising. But I don't think he'd be in a rush to get out of there. I think he truly believes this. He sees this as a project, and, you know, they've won the Champions Cup. I think that could be a starting point as opposed to an end point. And yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see what he does over the next couple of years, particularly post World Cup, I think, because that's when, you know, there's going to be a bit of movement in terms of coaches and stuff. And there's no doubt that certain countries are going to be throwing a lot of cash at him to try and get him there, I'd imagine.
Yeah, like, it's such a good achievement to, you know, La Rochelle. You look at, like, Racing 92 have never won it. They've lost in three finals. Clermont never won it. They lost in three finals. The only French teams to have won it, Toulouse, the big behemoth, Toulon, who had all these Galacticos, and then Brive in 1997 when it was very much in its infancy. Even for these big French clubs, Biarritz, Stade Francais, who got to a number of finals. They could never get over the line. And now Ronan O'Gara has done this with a team from, I think, 75,000 is the population there. You saw the scenes. It was unbelievable. It just, I don't know, I think it's an even bigger achievement than maybe had he gone to Racing 92, say, or Clermont, where they were kind of already big projects. Like, it feels like, I know John O'Gibbs was there last year, but he's had such a big hand in this.
Oh, look, he's been unbelievable, you know. And I think, like, it's just so impressive, isn't it? Like, it's funny watching him now. Like, I think what will be interesting to see is if he goes on to have a bigger, like a more successful coaching career than his playing career. Like, obviously, like, littered with success in his playing career. And, like, God, he's so likable, isn't he? Like, even when he's being an asshole, he's really likable. I always thought he was a guy I just so looked up to. Yeah, I love playing with him, and I just am so happy that things are going so well for him in the coaching. And I think, you know, when you know him a little bit personally, it doesn't really surprise you. Like, he was always a kind of deep thinker, and he had great belief in himself, and he's a smart guy too. Like, that, all those things kind of help, you know, and I'm sure he can deliver a brilliant message. And I'm not surprised that he was able to pick out a few. Like, do you know what's really important sometimes? It's not always that you pick out loads of data, but it's when you're looking at the data, can you get the big picture? And it sounds like he gets that. He goes, he can kind of see past all of the, you know, the rook stats and the tackle stats. He goes, well, look, that's what's important over the course of the season. Like, well, we know we're great in this period of the game. They're great in this period of the game, but if we're close, we know, like, I'm really confident that we can go ahead and win this thing. You know, and so he's obviously a big picture guy when it comes to his coaching as well. So, yeah, like, it's just brilliant to see, you know. And as much as it hurt as a Leinster, like, I'm obviously a Leinster supporter, but I, you know, when I'm doing these things, I obviously have to be able to remove myself and kind of look at the game with a cold enough eye. And I just thought he prepared the team so well. I mean, I watched them against Racing, and I said last week, Will, you know, that they can play a little bit of rugby, but they're just not in Leinster's league. They way outplayed Leinster, and they looked really comfortable on the ball, and their forwards were brilliant as well. You know, at all, you know, offloading, you know, being in the right place in contact. Their rucking was really good, I thought. And I also thought that their ball handling, they got the ball out really well to the danger areas, out from those big, like, because Leinster, when you're playing against big guys, you do have to condense a little bit to respect them. And that's where I feel like they were really good. They were able to get the ball out of those situations, and Leinster looked short on numbers a lot against a team that probably weren't pipped to, I suppose, you know, play a more expansive game plan or look more dangerous in the outside channels than Leinster. So, such an impressive coach in Spain. As you mentioned, like, Dunica Ryan, great to see the skin doing well as well. Big skin. You know, their lineup, you know, was run very, very well. Maul, you know, still a big threat. So he's done a great job too. And I mean, Steenkamp, but and look, I think he's working with some great materials in that scrum, in fairness. But yeah, the coaching staff, like, they're all young in their coaching careers. So it's great to see, you know, a dynamic young coaching staff being supported and delivering. They delivered. It was brilliant to see. So much as it hurts from a Leinster perspective, I can really appreciate it. And I was really happy for them.
Yeah. Keane, just to circle back to Leinster before we finish up, you know, you kind of alluded to it, I think, in your first answer about the, you know, the damage this result could potentially do, or the manner of which, you know, it came about, considering that, you know, I know we've talked at length about the mistakes that were made or various areas they could have improved, but they only conceded a try to lose the Champions Cup final on the last play of the game. So that is sickening no matter what way you dice it up. But, like, what does it mean for this collection of players who formed the bulk of the Irish team to now have lost, you know, maybe 4 years in a row and 4 big games in Europe? You know, they haven't won a Six Nations title since 2018 either. There's been some big World Cup defeats along the way as well. Like, is there a danger that this could kind of feed into a, you know, maybe some sort of air of negativity when they get back to a big game? What do you think?
I would worry that it could, because it goes back to my very first point that I made. Like, Stuart Lancaster is one of the smartest coaches in the game. We all know that. And obviously Leo Cullen is unbelievable as well at keeping everything together. Like, they had 13 months to change things, to, you know, get the better of a team who beat them. Like, Leo Cullen described last year's the semi-final defeat as haunting. And, like, he's a guy who uses his words really carefully. And, like, for him to describe the last year's game as haunting, God, I don't know what word he's going to use to describe this final. And point is, and I include myself in this 100%, believed that, you know, the improvements that they'd made in the game plan, which is obviously all based around speed, was going to be good enough to take on the bigger packs. And really, it wasn't because they couldn't get it going. So they went back to the drawing board last year. They revised what they were doing. They came up with a brilliant game plan. They're going to have to do it now again, but like, where's it going to come from? Like, how are you going to change it? Like I said, they're bringing in two players, but I wouldn't say either of them are ready-made kind of guys who you would guarantee. They're not like a kind of a Brad Thorn or like, you know, or a Rocky Elmson who's going to come in and really, really shake it up. And I wonder, over the last couple of years, I'm all for promoting the Irish guys, but could they have gotten in a more of an experienced kind of guy who's been there, done that? Basically, a Will Skelton is what I'm talking about, but they don't obviously grow on trees. But I think they're kind of missing. I think they're missing something. If I'm being honest, you look at the Leinster teams that obviously Luke was on, and they all had like real grizzled kind of experienced guys. Like even you think back to Scott Fardy in Bilbao, and I wonder, are they missing a bit of that? As much as like, you know, you want to see homegrown talent produce. So, I would worry that it could seep into the mentality. I mean, you would still imagine they'll win the URC, and they could come up against a big South African team, you know, but that would be in the RDS if that was to come to pass. So I don't think winning another URC Pro 14 is going to ease the pain of losing another Champions Cup, because Johnny Sexton said it before the game, and he said it afterwards. The barometer for success in Leinster is the Champions Cup, and we can't get away from that. So there's a massive tour coming down the line to New Zealand in the summer. And like Luke said, you know, they're in a bit of a transition period, the All Blacks as well, but on home soil, they're bloody tough to beat. But I mean, come when we're out getting looking really far the line now, but come the World Cup next year, when you're playing South Africa in a pool stage game, like, what's going to change between now and then that Ireland are going to be able to cope with the power and physicality of the Springboks? And then you're looking towards a potential quarterfinal, which is either going to be against the All Blacks or France. So I'd say Andy Farrell and his coaching staff are, you know, sitting more uncomfortably than they were this time last week after the loss, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, Luke, like, what's your perspective on kind of the potential fallout or kind of lasting damage that could be done?
I don't think it's time to panic on it. I think they played badly. They played badly. They didn't defend well. And I think they're a better team than they showed. And I think they need to rethink on some things. I think the bench is a good point that was brought up today. I think they need to have a think about that against some of the bigger teams and whether they can stop a team that's getting momentum against them. They don't look like they're able to do that at the moment. And that could be an area, because I think they have the bodies to do it. You know, Leinster in a rude health, you know, I do agree with Keenan that, like, are they really bringing in like a superstar, like an Easton Asiwa or a Rocky Elston, or a Brad Thorn, or even a Nathan Hines? Are they bringing in those guys? They don't sound like they are to me. And I think that, you know, if I'm bringing in those people, I'm kind of saying, well, like, why would I not just stick with the talent that I have, the local talent? Like, there's some serious up and comers there. And I don't think Leinster are going to automatically be shifting to, like, the game plan they were playing, I think, is good enough to do it. I just didn't think they executed it very well. And I think that's probably what will hurt them, is that they didn't show up on the big day. But I don't think it requires a wholesale rethink. I think there's only a few small things that they need to tweak. I think they're back next year, and I think they win it next year. There you go.
It's in Dublin, and they're bloody tough to beat in Dublin. So, like, that is going
to they're going to have to go away. They're going to have a tough day. Like, they have not had a tough day at the office. That was their first tough day at the office with a team that were ready for them, that had an edge on them in certain departments, like a clear edge in terms of size and physicality. And they didn't cope with it well. It was a shock to the system, I think. And that happens. No, that can't happen, and you need to be able to deal with that. But I think next year they come back and they win it. That drives them on. I think they rethink maybe one or two small things, and they look, I think that game plan is certainly good enough if they believe in it to beat the big teams. And I didn't think they did a lot of those things on the weekend, so that's what'll hurt, I think. You know, we covered that. I think some of the kick into touch, I don't always agree with it, but there's a certain level of belief, and that comes with that. And it can be very disheartening for the opposition if you do get tries, and they didn't do those things. So it'll hurt. It'll hurt bad. And I think they'll congratulate, you know, the La Rochelle were certainly the better team on the day. They can have no complaints about that. But doesn't require, now's not the time to panic. They need to go win that league. and you know, have a think about it over the summer. You know, that hurt will drive them on, I think, to a big performance next year using the same game plan, but I think virtually the same people. I don't think Jason Jenkins gets in that team, even when everyone, you know, when everyone's fit, if I'm being perfectly honest. And I don't know why they got him. It's crazy stuff considering the local talent they have. Just my tuppence.
On that note, Leinster won't have that much time to dust themselves down. They have to play Glasgow this weekend, the URC quarterfinals. And as it was mentioned there, the next year's final is in Dublin. So who knows, Leinster could be back there. But for the meantime, Luke, Keane, thanks so much for joining me. And that's all we have time for this week on the Left Wing Podcast. We'll be back next week with another show reviewing all the URC quarterfinal action. But for now, thanks so much for listening and goodbye.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.